Think about the last time someone let you down. Maybe a friend broke a promise or a company failed to deliver what they advertised. Your first instinct was probably to pull back, to protect yourself. Yet, here's what's strange. Despite living in an era where trust seems to be collapsing, where only 36% of Americans say they trust their fellow citizens, we still extend trust to strangers every single day. We hand our credit cards to waiters, share our deepest fears with therapists we've just met, and click "I agree" on terms we haven't read. This paradox lies at the heart of a fascinating truth. We're hardwired to trust, even when logic suggests we shouldn't. Research reveals something counterintuitive about how we approach new relationships. We don't start at zero and slowly build confidence. Instead, we begin with surprisingly high trust levels, often at the midpoint or above on trust scales. This isn't naivety, it's evolutionary wisdom. Three forces drive this tendency. The systems around us, laws, incentives, social norms that make betrayal costly, our personality traits that predispose many of us toward optimism, and our lightning-fast assessments of others based on competence, integrity, fairness, and loyalty. These snap judgments happen before we have real evidence, relying on shortcuts like group membership, reputation, and even facial features. A person with a trustworthy face often receives more trust, and then, remarkably, lives up to it. When people feel trusted, they frequently rise to meet those expectations rather than exploit them. This baseline trust greases the wheels of society. Without it, every handshake would require a background check, every transaction a legal team. Countries with higher trust levels consistently outperform low-trust societies economically, precisely because trust reduces friction and enables cooperation. But when that trust shatters, we're remarkably bad at putting the pieces back together. Trust violations ripple across generations. The Tuskegee experiment ended in 1972, but during COVID-19, Black Americans dying at twice the rate of white Americans were significantly less likely to get vaccinated. This wasn't irrational. It was a rational response to institutional betrayal their grandparents lived through. Trust breaks create expanding circles of harm. Direct victims, witnesses, bystanders, even strangers who share characteristics with the betrayer. Trust violations mirror trauma responses. Both shatter fundamental beliefs about how the world works. Both create hypervigilance and overgeneralization. If one partner cheated, everyone seems suspicious. Here's where things get strange. Apologies often make things worse. The key lies in two distinct violations, competence failures versus integrity breaches. For competence issues, honest mistakes, apologies work because we focus on remorse and improvement. For integrity violations, lies, deliberate harm, this flips entirely. We obsess over negative signals and discount positive ones. When someone apologizes for an integrity breach, we fixate on the confession. They just admitted they're a bad person, while dismissing their regret as strategic manipulation. The difference between competence and integrity violations hinges on intent. Did you mean to cause harm, or was it an accident? When researchers simulated business relationships, breaking explicitly documented contract terms was judged far more harshly than violating undocumented expectations, even when the actual harm was identical. Written violations appear intentional, signaling an integrity problem. The Central Park Five case illustrates how intent shapes our willingness to accept apologies. Even after DNA exonerated five wrongfully convicted teenagers, lead prosecutor Linda Fairstein never apologized. When Netflix's When They See Us portrayed her role in 2019, public backlash was swift. Her publisher dropped her, and she faced widespread boycotts. Her refusal to apologize signaled the original prosecution was an integrity violation rather than a competence failure. Our response to integrity violations creates perverse incentives for dishonesty. Research shows that when someone denies an integrity violation, we trust them more than if they'd apologized, even when we suspect they're lying. This explains why Facebook abandoned its apologetic stance for a combative approach. Silence, however, is the worst option, damaging trust as much as the worst possible active response. How we frame transgressions as competence failures or integrity violations dramatically shapes consequences. Arnold Schwarzenegger won election despite groping accusations by framing his behavior as misguided playfulness, while Bill Clinton faced impeachment for a consensual affair. The college admissions scandal highlights this disparity. Stanford sailing coach John Vandemore accepted $770,000 from Rick Singer, but directed every penny to the sailing program, resembling a competence failure rather than the integrity violations of coaches who pocketed bribes. Yet he faced criminal charges while Stanford officials escaped through strategic ignorance. Healing requires moving beyond simplistic narratives. Marriage counselors addressing infidelity push couples past finger-pointing. As Brené Brown notes, affairs typically follow earlier betrayals, disengagement, emotional withdrawal, intimacy's slow erosion. The affair is symptom, not disease. Our justice system reveals conflicted values about redemption. America incarcerates 2.2 million people, a 500% increase over 40 years driven by policy changes, not rising crime. We evaluate moral character like bank accounts. Good acts add credits, bad acts create debits. Yet perceived repentance, not punishment's actual cost, determines trust repair. A sincere apology can prove as effective as substantive responses if it convincingly demonstrates regret. The Sackler family aggressively marketed OxyContin while dismissing addiction concerns, triggering a crisis that killed 450,000 Americans and cost $2.15 trillion. They shielded their $30 billion fortune through offshore accounts and legal maneuvers, reaching a settlement many deemed inadequate. This pattern, the powerful escaping justice through expensive lawyers, fuels our suspicion of authority. Power complicates trust beyond obvious corruption. How do we reconcile FDR's leadership with his internment of Japanese Americans, or MLK's civil rights achievements with his affairs? We systematically overestimate powerful people's control, attributing unrealistic influence to leaders. This makes their actions seem more intentional and their remorse less authentic. Ironically, unconventional leaders like Donald Trump maintain trust despite missteps. Their apparent lack of emotional control reads as authenticity. The 2017 Charlottesville rally exemplifies how intergroup conflict fuels distrust. Arbitrary differences quickly become us versus them categories, making trust easier within groups than between them. We interpret our group's offenses more favorably than outsiders. Executives naturally assume transgressions are mistakes, but employees and the public, seeing them as different, infer deliberate wrongdoing. Reactions to Breonna Taylor's and George Floyd's killings illustrate this dynamic. Police unions defended officers as making mistakes or cited bad apples rather than systemic issues. Social media amplifies this effect, creating interpretive bubbles that breed radicalization. Trust follows dramatically different cultural rules. In Japan, middle-aged men often hide unemployment even from neighbors, viewing economic failure as permanent stigma. Unlike Americans who celebrate comebacks, Japanese collectivistic culture sees failure as letting down the entire group. Japanese participants were less likely to interpret apologies as admissions of guilt, making apologies more effective for integrity violations in Japan than America. Since Japanese believe individuals have less control over their actions, apologies for competence violations worked better in America. What constitutes integrity depends on five moral intuitions: care, fairness, loyalty, authority, and sanctity. Eastern cultures value loyalty and sanctity more than Western ones. Women prioritize care, fairness, and sanctity more than men. American liberals emphasize care and fairness, while conservatives prioritize loyalty, authority, and sanctity. Our moral judgments aren't as rational as we believe. People immediately judge scenarios as wrong, then struggle to justify their reactions. Moral reasoning happens after judgment, not before, explaining why rational arguments rarely change moral principles. Resolution comes when we recognize competing principles aren't right versus wrong, but right versus right. Breaking free from interpretive bubbles and engaging in genuine dialogue counters polarization. Exposure to dissenting viewpoints leads to more sophisticated thinking, helping us recognize competing perspectives and integrate them coherently. Repairing trust isn't always feasible. When violators show no remorse or pose ongoing risks, protection makes sense. Yet, failing to repair salvageable relationships carries significant costs. Research shows we make poor judgments about trust repair, with reactions easily influenced by framing. To become better stewards of trust, we must examine three elements. First, investigate why violations occur rather than making automatic attributions. We categorize violations based on our motivations, deciding a loved one's transgression was unintentional because we want reconciliation, or labeling an enemy's actions as intentional to justify rejection. Second, recognize that people prioritize moral principles differently. A CEO might manipulate finances to preserve jobs, seeing it as justified, while observers condemn it as unethical. These perspectives require dialogue beyond our interpretive bubbles. Third, calibrate retributions thoughtfully. Excessive punishment backfires. When penalties are severe, offenders deny culpability, rationalize behavior, and feel permanently stigmatized. Four lessons emerge. Most people want to be good and loved. Trust repair requires acknowledging truth's multifaceted nature. Trust strengthens when others believe our intentions are good. The hardest lesson? Trust repair isn't entirely up to us. It always depends partly on the offender. Events like the January 6th Capitol insurrection reveal dangerous modern mistrust. Yet hope emerges through politicians defying their party and corporations withdrawing support from election deniers. Understanding how trust breaks and mends isn't academic. It's the difference between society holding together and tearing apart.